Gold and silver blasted higher this week along with their shares. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, here with you. We've got another big show this weekend. Bill Murphy from Gotta.org returns to the show with his latest on the national gold stockpile. He's convinced while we continue to swap and rehypothecate, the BRIC central banks continue to accumulate. And Bill Murphy says there's a 100-to-1 risk-to-reward ratio on silver. He only sees a buck or two on the downside with at least $100 on the upside. We also investigate the short selling or naked short selling of highly illiquid markets, which could also send these tiny precious metals markets skyward. Then I welcome back John Embry, senior strategist at Sprott Asset Management. The friend of the show says the precious metals sector is red hot, up 16% in the first quarter alone. He thinks the retail market has yet to even begin to move back into gold and silver, which could mean very good things on a forward basis. And he's watching the gold-to-silver ratio, expecting a 20-to-1, which would make silver one of the most undervalued investment assets in the world today. In other words, opportunity might just be knocking. And then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest editorial. Gold Seek begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the New York COMEX exchange this week on news of further dollar weakness following more dovish comments from Fed officials and dovish meeting minutes on Thursday. Gold has seen its biggest quarter now in almost three decades. By Friday's close, the L-metal had added 20 for the week, up over 1.6%, finishing at $1,243 an ounce. Silver finished at $1,538, adding 2.25%. And the XAU and gold silver equities indexes continued to punish the sellers, finishing at $74, up 4.3 points. That's 6% on the week. But wait, West Texas Intermediate crude literally had the cat of nine tails on sellers, up nearly 9%, finishing near $40 a barrel. The top story pushing the gold market higher was released on Thursday. News of Federal Reserve minutes revealed nervous comments on the economy by our policymakers. Evidently, the doves have the upper hand with regard to rate hikes. The report showed concerns over global economic risks, suggesting that Fed officials might be less inclined to stick their collective heads out, especially when their BOJ and EU colleagues' heads are safely out of sight. The news put further downward pressure on the U.S. dollar, which dropped to the lowest point in over 7 months amid the rate indecision. Fed Chair Janet Yellen noted on Thursday concerns over the labor market, where the national unemployment rate inched higher to 5% in the latest reading. That's one of the first increases in years. The next FOMC meeting is slated for the end of this month. Well, moving on, more positive news for the sector ETFs. Bullion holdings continue to soar to the latest report, up 2 tons to 1,764 tons, according to a Bloomberg report. In addition, there's news that the London Bullion Market Association is reviewing bids for a more transparent gold and silver trading platform and new futures contracts. Currently, it remains the largest market for spot and forward contracts, with over 4.6 billion ounces cleared. That's half the global total. Precious metals, bottom line. The 15 support level in silver held and 1,200 on gold. So both supports are still strong. As long as these areas remain firm, I expect another big advance within less than 8 weeks. So 4 to 8 weeks. And that would take silver first to 1850 and as high as 2021 and gold roughly 100 or more higher. I think the key will be the U.S. dollar. It's retesting its lows and that would encourage, I think, more short covering in the precious metal. Moving on to the Wall Street Report. Cloudy skies appeared over the New York Stock Exchange after several months of advances. Investors were somewhat unnerved by, I think, ambiguous comments by the Federal Reserve. By Friday's closing bell, the Dow finished at 17,612, off about 180, just 1%. The S&P 500 ended at 20,047, off 25, just over 1%, while the NASDAQ gave back 63, 1.3%, finishing near 4,850 for the week. Clearly, investors are not only watching, I think, the Fed for signs of another rate hike, searching for better than anticipated earnings numbers from corporations. In the first quarter, we saw the S&P earnings numbers decline for the fourth quarter in a row. This suggests the bulls may be somewhat overly optimistic here. Now, on the contrary, forecasts indicate we'll see a bump higher in earnings later in the year. Bottom line on Wall Street. Well, market volatility as viewed by the CBOT VIX remains supportive. However, the fear to greed index, I think, is starting to show signs of overconfidence by the bulls. I don't see any reason to chase shares at these levels. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. At the helm of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee, working on behalf of investors. How's the weather in Dallas today, Bill Murphy?
Great to be here, Chris, and it couldn't be nicer here in Dallas. A great place to live. It's about 80, going to be 80 degrees, sunny, and beautiful.
Well, a nice spring day there in Dallas as well. Let's move on to the gold allocation in the U.S. Treasury. An interesting story today off the GATA site, actually, that says that Jim Rickards, the well-known monetary and financial commentator, in his new book, The Case for Gold, says the U.S. Treasury refuses to allow an audit of the gold reserves because they're concerned that it would lead to mayhem in the markets. Do you think all the gold's there?
Well, I haven't for more than a decade, and that it's, you know, just recently one of our followers had posed to Bill Dudley about, you know, whether the United States had swapped gold with other central banks or other countries over the past 20 years. He wouldn't answer the question. It's an important one because the United States can't sell any of its gold without an act of Congress. However, it can swap gold with another country or institution, central bank, and sell their gold, and that's what we believe that they've done over the years at times to suppress the price. So the answer is I don't think we have anywhere near the gold that we said they have, and they're desperately afraid of an audit. That's why they won't do it, because mayhem is an understatement. If what would happen if we found, if the world realized the United States had half or a third of the gold it says it has, if it has that.
According to a recent Financial Times article in London, apparently the central bankers around the world, though, are accumulating the yellow metal at a record clip, 483 tons. I mean, we're not talking ounces here. We're not talking pounds. Tons last year alone. That was the second largest total. Of course, that removes supply forever, virtually, from the market. So, you know, geopolitical tensions obviously have the central bankers, at least the wiser of the central bankers, which probably means if Russia, China.
From my experience, I can say, and I've said this for many years now, the Russians and Chinese know what GATA knows. They know what the United States and other Western central banks have done by disgorging their gold to keep the price down. And meanwhile, they're accumulating, like you just said. I mean, the Russians have talked about GATA publicly. Their central bank has. Oleg Mozgov, Andrei Baikov, has been to our conferences twice. The Russians know what GATA knows. Andrei said that our conference in the Yukon was the finest conference he'd ever attended. I've talked to the Chinese Sovereign Wealth Fund three times. I know the Chinese know what we know, and has been mentioned in different documents about them acknowledging that to some degree. And so they're quietly accumulating it and not telling anybody what they really have. And they know what's coming and they think longer term, whereas we're just, you know, thinking on a very short term basis.
You talk about knowing what's coming. Andrew McGuire, the well-known whistleblower in London, he might return to the show as soon as next week or so. He has a big announcement. Now, he seems to think that there's going to be an earthquake in the precious metals markets, privy to information that maybe the rest of us are just waking up to, or at least the mainstream is aware of. So it should be an interesting announcement. Also wanted to ask you about just how much further you think these U.S. equities can run and what that might mean or portend. Seems to be losing momentum, even though we've had a good solid couple of months in U.S. stocks. If the market rolls over, where is all that interest in funds going to be directed?
Well, the answer is a resounding yes, and we saw that in January. I mean, when the Dow and Nasdaq and other indices were just getting clobbered, as were other markets all over the world, and the safe haven trade in gold was pronounced, and it led to the spoken about recently to the best quarter and 30 years, almost 30 years. So that trade has disappeared with, once again, our stock market going right back up again. I mean, not that far from all-time highs. It is as if all those concerns completely disappeared in a very short period of time. So, and then over the past year, 2 years, you know, the stock market has rolled over every time it's got to these levels. And if it does it again and there's some more concern, that no doubt in my mind the safe haven trade will come back in a major league way. And it's just waiting there to be ignited.
As Jim Rickards also points out recently, and I think many of us have been aware of for a while, negative interest rates takes away one of the bear's favorite comments about gold. You might say the short seller's favorite aspects, and that was this barbarous relic. It doesn't throw off any interest. It doesn't have a yield. It doesn't have a dividend payment. That's no longer the case. When the BOJ and the EU and three or four Scandinavian and several other central bankers, smaller central bankers around the world, charging folks just for putting money in the bank, of course, that actually gives gold a yield by comparison. Do you have any comments there on this sort of really sea change event? I mean, as far as I know, for the past 1,000 years of central banking and monetary schemes, we've never had sustained negative interest rates.
Huge plus. I mean, and Jim Rickards is right. And we have a long, God has a long story with Jim Rickards going back to when we started, but it won't go there. But I will mention that he spoke at our conference in London in August of 2011, and I have a lot of great respect for Jim. And it's correct. I mean, it's huge, and it's liable to be more so as the year goes on. So it certainly can add to the gold-silver fireworks scenario that I see coming.
You know, there are some interesting anecdotes, maybe even comical. I guess that's up to the listener to decide. Making the news lines at Gatta was that India's finance minister, his wife is on board with Gatta. And the rest of the gold crowd refused to allow their gold jewelry to be paperized on their personal private property. I mean, that's the whole idea. That's one of the, I think, more important aspects of the precious metals. I think it's just one more clue or indication, if you will, that people around the world are starting to wake up and recognize that things just don't smell right in the financial markets, where there can be policymakers and central bankers making rules and whatnot under the table behind closed doors, and the rest of us have to deal with the consequences.
That's interesting. And ever since Ben Bernanke went and visited India, that they've come up with all these different rules to so-called paperized gold and all this kind of thing. It's strange because gold is such an important part of the, you know, Indian culture. And it's interesting that, you know, we felt it necessary, and I just stole my own opinion, that to get in there and interfere with all that and somehow behind the scenes convince India to go in that direction. So who knows what kind of deal was struck. And, of course, it's in such contrast to what's going on in China. So it's interesting, and it's also interesting to see the way that the Indians aren't responding to it very well at all, and I can certainly understand why.
Just read an article that noted that in China, jewelry buying around the Lunar New Year holiday tends to be somewhat solid. Of course, that already occurred in early February. But what's surprising, and this is surprising a lot of the retailers there, one is noting a very large Hong Kong-based bullion dealer noted they've sold more in the first 3 weeks of March than all of February. They're seeing the 250-gram gold bars, about a $10,000 U.S. investment, up tenfold. So people definitely are interested, and demand is there. Supply, I guess, must remain somewhat tight. Those just seem like good conditions. Of course, you know, we can't go up in a straight line. What should investors be thinking about for the rest of 2016? Any forward-based comments?
My standpoint, right now everybody knows that the gold cartel has got a call. So they're trying to keep the price from going up and force it back down like they do, and that's what the positions show. And then you've got on the other side the speculative longs that see what's coming and the physical market taking them on. And I think the way gold traded in January, and hopefully we'll start trading again, and certainly has the last, you know, couple of days, you know, popping out of nowhere a little bit, shows what is likely to happen. And that is the prices of gold and silver are likely to explode out of nowhere, especially silver, which we didn't get into. But, I mean, it's the worst acting market I've ever seen, and it's going to turn into the best. And when the shift occurs, it will happen right out of the blue. Now's the time to be jumping all over it and get on board before it happens, because it's going to be very difficult to get on board when the change occurs. I mean, you see silver take out 1850.
And this week's show, you will be aired with Mr. John Embry from Sprott Asset Management, and he brought up a similar point. He just seems to think that silver, even if gold were to stay right where it is right now, if it returns to its, 20 to 1 or even 15 to 1 gold to silver ratio, you would see silver north of $50 an ounce, which is its intrinsic value, he seemed to imply.
Well, the highest regard for John, as you probably know, and he knows his stuff, and silver's the Achilles heel of this gold cartel, and they've completely just ruined the market, and they've been able to do it, and it's just like it's dead. I mean, it's just it's like it's got an anchor at 15. It used to be 14. It just sits there, and it's like it got an anchor tied to it. And once that anchor is shucked, that's when it's going to explode. And as I mentioned, it will probably happen when we least expect it. And the risk reward right now in silver is about a buck or two, and the upside is well over $100. So it's off the charts in what's coming, and it just takes a lot of patience. And has it been frustrating? Absolutely. It's the price you pay to make a fortune in markets when other people aren't willing to understand what's really going on.
That's a favorable risk-to-reward ratio, and maybe even a conservative one if we look out far enough into the future. 100 to 1 is definitely a possibility. And the only other thing I'd add is that, Mr. John Embry mentioned one of the interesting aspects here could be naked short selling. We were discussing that. And if you saw the HUI, blast higher by nearly 100%, 80 to 100% from the beginning of this year to its peak. A lot of that we were speculating might have been these hedge funds and institutions who had borrowed invisible shares, actually non-existent shares, which is diluting a company's shares out of thin air. They had to buy back shares that didn't even exist. It might even be a force majeure on the markets.
Yeah, it could easily happen. I think, and what's important for your listeners to appreciate, because it's facts, is that the shares actually, the HUI and XAU and so on, are acting totally differently this year than they have in years past. I mean, normally when the correction was coming, they would just collapse. They would give up all their gains and disappear. Well, the HUI is technically looks fantastic and is close to making another breakout and is up 80% off its low. And meanwhile, gold and silver have gone back in the tank for the very short term here. And this is a dichotomy that's glaring, and it suggests that the big picture is in the works of gold and silver all of a sudden going bonkers again. So it's not just a hope trade here where, you can look at some things that are going on that says it's not too far off.
Very good. Bill Murphy, please tell folks more about the exciting things they'll find at Gata.org and La Metropole Cafe.
Well, I can sign up for a 2-week free trial of Metropole Cafe, which I've been doing since September of 1999. And Chris Powell, my colleague right now in Asia, the conference, just spoke today. And people can go to www.gata.org and check out what Chris puts out. He does a great job. And we've been colleagues a long time. He's a great guy. And we intend to stay at it till we win the day.
We thank you, Bill Murphy.
Thanks, Chris.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes 3 deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, John Embry has been a leader at Sprott Asset Management for several decades. It's a pleasure to have him back on the show. Welcome back, John Embry.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Chris.
Precious metals at least started off to a great year. We had the best showing in several decades, really, for the beginning of a year, 15-16%, things looking up.
Well, I think the headlines about gold being up 16% in the first quarter sort of unnerved the central bank fraternity. There's been a fair amount of pressure brought on gold since then. But to me, it's just a short-term issue. And I see materially higher prices for gold and silver as this year unfolds. I wish I could say the same for the stock market. It looks a little extended to me. And there's been constant intervention in that market to make sure it doesn't sort of fall precipitously. So we shall see as we move forward, but there is a lot of interference in these markets.
Stocks are up so many thousands of percent over many, many decades. But if you take a look at gold and silver, just from a non-inflation adjusted basis, just where it was, let's say, 30 years ago in actual dollar terms, pretty close to parity. We've hardly budged at all. Yes, the investment du jour has been equities for a few years. But is that really what I want to trust on a valuation basis going forward?
Chris, I've been in the stock market for over 50 years. And quite frankly, I've seen very few markets that are probably as overvalued as the U.S. market is right now. You're dealing with an international economy which is weakening noticeably virtually everywhere. You're dealing with profits that have been propped up by, faulty accounting. And you're dealing with valuations which are extended. I mean, this is the worst possible combination in my view. I would be extraordinarily careful if I was invested in the conventional U.S. stock market.
Let's call them artificial props holding up the market. You have the intervention team.
Call them the PPT. Yeah. I love the plunge protection team.
But plunge protection team, PPT, right? Sure. And so they also have the buyback schemes where they buy back their own shares. Intervention by the central bankers as well as holding rates below zero now. I mean, the combination has just been lighter fluid on the stock market, but every bonfire comes to an end at some point. Gold equities led the charge from the recent nadir, remarkable rally in the HUI and the XAU Gold Bugs Index. Give us your thoughts on shares on a forward basis, please.
You know, quite frankly, on January the 19th, when the HUI index bottomed at just under 100, I thought I'd never seen them, and I followed these stocks for a long time, I've never seen them any cheaper in relation to the price of the metal, and the price of the metal was depressed. So I'm actually encouraged now that finally the market is recognizing that these things were grotesquely underpriced. We've had an 80% rally since January the 19th, and normally that would make people very uncomfortable because you'd sort of say, we've got to have a big correction here. But the fact is, I think they're still cheap, and if the gold price does what I think is going to unfold over the remainder of the year, I think people are going to make tremendous amounts of money in the shares from right here. And I'm very sort of, you're always uncomfortable when they're sort of messing around in the gold bullion market. That the shares have been really resolute, and that encourages me.
And I even wonder just how much naked short selling may have played a part over the past 5 or 6 years. A sanctioned way of selling shares that nobody owns, diluting shares almost overnight, and some of the institutions have this ability. That creates a remarkable upside potential to where, as you say, and I think justly, an 80% move might just be the opening salvo, because these folks have to buy back shares if they went naked short. And I feel very confident in saying numerous hedge funds were naked short the XAU and the HUI. Those have to be covered. And then the general equities investors start to recognize, wait, there's opportunity here.
That's an excellent point, Chris. And I think the general public isn't anywhere near this space yet. And when you put in the context of how small the gold and silver bullion and share market in totality is in relation to this massive amount of financial assets floating around out there, all of which are in bubbles, I mean, the potential in this sector is enormous, and yet very few people recognize it, which always makes me comfortable. I love not having much company.
It's oftentimes good to be contrarian in the market. And, you know, there's also a point we haven't really touched on, and that's how the precious metal shares have a tendency to lead the underlying metals. We've seen this so many times in the past, but I guess most notably and most recently, the 2000 to 2002 bottom, you know, the XAU, HUI, just put in beautiful bottoming patterns that indicated we had years of a bull market ahead. And they never really let us down well into 2011, 2012. We're starting to see some signs, bottoming patterns.
I would agree with you. I think that the shares in my career have generally led the metals higher because there's an anticipation and there's more leverage in the shares. So consequently, when people see an opportunity forming, they're going to go into the shares for the big trade. So I think that tends to confirm my sort of belief that gold and silver prices are moving materially higher from current levels. You know, and I love gold because, I mean, it's the rich man's investment. But the one with the greatest upside potential is silver, as you know, is called poor man's gold. Because when the gold price starts to get really extended, a lot of people that want to get in the space aren't going to be able to afford to buy gold bullion. It's going to be too expensive in their context. They'll buy silver. And the gold-silver ratio, which is now in the neighborhood of 80 to 1, it can fall as low as 15, 20 to 1 in a bull market for precious metals. So the upside in silver is very exciting.
For our new listeners, even if gold just held its current price, your 15 or 20 to 1 basic arithmetic tells us we're talking about a silver price of
$50. $50 is just jacks for openers as far as I'm concerned. The thing I look at is that, I mean, the amount of money and debt that's been created in the world since the crash in 07-08 has been enormous. And for the last 4.5-5 years, gold and silver have been under significant pressure, led by the central banks and their allies. These things are so cheap relative to the amount of paper outstanding. I'm not sure they've ever been cheaper in history. It's just basically you got to get the momentum going in a big way. And when it goes, people are going to be shocked at the price levels that are achieved.
You might recall the term, you know, buy land, they ain't making any more of it. If you think land is rare, silver has a tendency to pull near the surface of the earth, probably due to asteroid impact, just a guess, early on in the earth's crust. Those easy to find nuggets, if you will, have already been identified, the Comstock lodes.
It's worse than that, because, I mean, the gold and silver prices have been controlled with paper shorting. And the people who've been buying the other side, the longs in the paper market, there's no gold and silver to any extent backing this stuff. So a lot of people think they own gold and silver, and they own a paper sort of a thing that can recreate the price. So, I mean, the demand when this finally, this Ponzi scheme is revealed, got problems in the future. I mean, I this is why I'm so optimistic about sort of the major upside in this, and I'm confirmed in the fact that nobody's there yet.
I like the idea of Ponzi scheme, although I wonder if they won't have a new moniker by the time this is all over. Will it be the Greenspan or the Bernanke scheme? This lack of supply, huge demand. Silver, of course, is primarily consumed right now in electronics, so it disappears forever. They're not really making all that much more of it. It's extremely energy intensive to extract from the ground and refine and all the rest of it. I think you're right, but the last thing I'd throw in here is you talked about paper schemes, and I think this takes us to our naked shorting earlier. Eventually, the shorts, which have almost an unlimited number of arrows in their quiver at these relatively tiny markets, gold and silver, eventually, you know, they will run out of arrows, and then they have the unenviable position of having to cover something which, you might agree, cannot be covered. You talked about the ETFs, and I think this all ties in together with the ETFs. They will default more than likely.
So, I mean, that's the last thing you want if you think you own gold. I mean, one of the things I emphasize to people is you must, if you own gold and silver and plan to buy it, buy physical or buy a paper product that you have 100% audited guarantee that the gold and silver backing it is there in entirety. and there aren't many of those. We as a firm do offer Sprott Physical Gold and Sprott Physical Trust, and I can assure you it's all there, unlike a lot of these other products.
As we wrap up today, is there any other topicality that listeners need to be watching? Maybe you're not buying the Fed's idea of another rate hike. We'd be stuck here, or maybe even they're lowering into negative territory as the BOJ and the EU.
I think the Fed is very worried about the U.S. dollar, and I think there's a lot of moral suasion going on here about, you know, the potential of higher rates to keep people in the space. I mean, the demand for dollars has fallen a lot with the oil price, eh? And you've got China and Russia with alternative plans and what have you. The American authorities have a major problem, because if the dollar ever starts to fall apart, I mean, there's going to be mayhem in markets in the U.S. and in the economy.
And any other information you'd like to share about Sprott Asset Management?
We are a firm that really believes in precious metals, and I think our products have, you know, stood the test of time. They are backed by, you know, real gold and silver, and I would recommend, if you're looking for that, if you want a paper rather than take physical possession yourself, those are good vehicles.
Excellent. We thank you for your time, sir.
My pleasure, Chris. Anytime.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources, based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves. Industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
All right, opening up the phone lines for listeners' questions and comments.
Hello, Chris. This is Dave calling from California. Curious to find out about, I think you said you moved into a new place. I'm curious is whether you moved your permaculture setup with your tilapia and all that. Just curious to find out how that's going. Hopefully you still got it going on. Keep up the great work. Excellent interviews lately. Thanks.
First up, it's Dave from California. He asks about my family's tilapia and chickens. Well, hi, Dave. Actually, we still have our blue and Nile tilapia from our original stock, and we also have subsequent broods. They're pets. They're not for consumption. In addition, we still have our chickens, which continue to make great pets for our little ones in the family, as well as for their wonderful eggs. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't eat meat at all. In any way, shape, or form. And, you know, I'd like to encourage everyone who's interested to take the plunge. You know, it takes about a year to replenish the body, to remove all meat products from the body. And I'll tell you, after well over 12 months without any meat whatsoever, it's certainly been one of the greatest blessings in my lifetime. So anyone interested, I highly encourage you. But Dave, thanks for asking, and I hope that you're also taking steps to secure your family's future.
Hi, Chris. I love your show. I appreciate what you do. And my question is, what do you think of these stories that surface every so often that claim that somebody through alchemy have somehow been able to manufacture gold? In other words, without mining it, they just make it in the laboratory, I guess. I saw one recently on the Financial Survival Network webpage, and I've seen it in other places, and I would like your comments. Thank you.
And the next caller comments on creating gold through alchemy. Alchemy really has a bad rap. You know, even Sir Isaac Newton was a alchemist, if you will, although he is considered by many to be the father of modern physics in the form that we understand it today. Alchemy was one of his many, many, many passions. So as for whether or not we can produce it yet, produce gold, that is, through chemical processes, I have to say most likely not. As far as we know, it involves huge nuclear forces, such as an exploding star, a supernova. Under the right conditions in the laboratory, I do believe gold can be produced, but that's with an enormous energy expense. And of course, with that energy expense comes huge financial costs. So in other words, it's just not economical right now. I mean, sure, you could make a, you know, a hundredth of a gram or something, but if it costs several million dollars to produce that, what have you really done? That being said, I don't want to discourage folks who are interested and this is their passion. I do believe that eventually new exciting energy sources will be discovered, just like going from the steam age to the coal age, if you will, coal and steam, to now nuclear and petroleum and diesel. You know, these were massive increases, changed the world forever, helped spark a new industrial revolution. Well, similarly, I think we'll see things that we refer to now is free energy, such as tapping into graviton fields, things of that nature, where virtually limitless energy will be available to almost any researcher, and at that point in time, likely many, many decades, if not centuries in the future, with almost limitless energy at your fingertips, well, you can produce almost any metal that you'd like for virtually free. I do believe that this is quite possible, but I wouldn't expect to see it, and at least not in my lifetime, and not likely in our kids' lifetime as well. For instance, you know, diamonds are produced regularly around the world in the laboratory, and many are sold on the market, and they're virtually flawless. However, they're not natural, and there's a lot of debate on whether or not this is realistic and what have you, but yes, they can produce diamonds. If you can produce diamonds, you can also produce gold. Very different process, but still, it is a possibility, just not cost-effective yet.
I just want to make a comment and see if you could help me. Technically, the spot gold price finally gave way to the structurally bear market as prices plunged below 1138, which was nearly a year-long support. It is now 1095 as I speak. Every rally following the initial breakdown in 2013 has failed to exceed the prior rally, which supports the trend of selling into strength. The target of 1,000 represents the support of the 2008-2009 consolidation. The 2001 uptrend in the lower 800s over time will intersect the current downtrend. This, technically speaking, would be a good target objective. I'm aware of the tremendous worldwide demand for physical gold. Also aware of the depletion from the Western central banks sending gold to the East and possibility of a failure to deliver causing a short squeeze that could cause the insolvency of many institutions, especially in the derivatives. I would appreciate if you could comment on how to rectify the differences in these two facts. I can't. It's a conundrum to me. Thank you.
George is up next. He uses technical analysis, which seems to indicate a buy in the yellow metal around 800 to 1,000, maybe strong support there. Well, first of all, long time no hear. Great to hear from you. Glad you're still listening to the show. You know, it sounds like you've been secretly subscribed to my Alpha Stocks newsletter, and this has been my target now for, I want to say, at least a year. And I've been on record. I had the downtrend light up for several years, it seems now. If I understand the question correctly, you're perplexed, though, by this conflicting bearish signal you see in your technical work and the bullish global demand, of course, fundamental, where there could be a force majeure in the markets and or a derivative squeeze, thanks in part to this monetary machinations and repatriation of the yellow metal into national coffers around the globe. Many thoughts spring to mind here. Firstly, we've had several folks in the industry, some on the show, comment that the powers that be, such as the plunge protection team, could be shorting the precious metals sector in order to orchestrate a positive economic environment. This would be very easy to do, especially with silver. I mean, these are tiny markets relative to the Forex or the Dow Jones or, you know, I mean, they, you know, gold might comprise just a handful of the Dow Jones holdings in that index. Silver may be just the smallest component of the Dow 30. So it wouldn't take much firepower given massive derivatives leverage to manipulate these markets, especially if you're using Livermore-style tactics. However, I do think it's important for us to recognize the prevailing market bias. You know, this has just been my theme for a decade on this show. You notice that it's downward. I suggest that everyone who's interested direct their web browsers, bookmark it if you like, to stockcharts.com. 2001 to 2005, that period on the weekly chart. You can punch in, let's say, the $XAU, $gold, $silver, each independently. And I think you'll see, especially the XAU, pronounced consolidation, you know, trading range and whatnot. We all, I think, noticed this. I did. I took notice immediately and I thought, goodness, this is an inverted head and shoulder. This is the bottom on the XAU. And I looked at gold and silver and saw similar patterns unfolding. And then, you know, around 2002 to 2003, it became even more apparent. You could accumulate there from 2002 to 2003, 4, 5, 6, and you still caught the bulk of the move from 2001 to 2012. So, you know, this 12-year rally, you didn't have to catch it right away to get on board that locomotive, and did it ever steam away at breakneck speed? Catching the exact bottom, maybe not so important for traders if that's your calling. Not many folks, though, I think, make that a lifelong profession. I don't expect there to be a sudden snapback that where we all miss the bottom on this. So why be in such a hurry to find a bottom? Let the markets telegraph it to us. For instance, the housing crash gave us 3 or 4 years of a solid downtrend, then bounced along the bottom for 2 or 3 years, and then started a very noticeable uptrend. And it's remained an uptrend ever since. Will that change? Well, it could. But until then, let's just obey the primary autocorrelation, if you will, or serial correlation, long memory. You can use, insert any term you like for the prevailing theme or trend, up or down. Well, right now, it's obviously not up. Okay, that's putting it nicely. So no reason to get overweighted on exposure there. Always smart to keep a component. But until we see that change, I wouldn't make it the primary focus. Instead, let's look at markets that are showing long-term status that have turned around. For instance, the U.S. dollar, ticker symbol UUP, and even short-term treasuries, the SHY you can take a look at, 30-year treasuries, TLT, but keep in mind there's a lot more volatility there and higher interest as well. These are areas where you can, you know, start to consider adding a component to your portfolio slowly over time, and as that component grows in value, you might consider adding more through dollar cost averaging, for instance. As for having to catch the precise bottom, I would leave that for the Jesse Livermores of the world, and we all know how that story ended. We don't want to try to catch that. You know, as he pointed out, you know, the top dollar and the bottom dollar of any market move are the most expensive because everybody's trying to reach it.
Hey, Chris. This is Bob in Texas. I wanted to ask a question regarding a lot of this talk involved about bank bail-ins and the possibility of those coming to the United States. Do you think these are going to possibly be your banks with large derivative books and large mortgage books, or is it going to be across the board, banks in general? I'm just curious if maybe you could find a small hometown bank that won't experience a bail-in because it's got good financial conditions. I just want to see what your thoughts are on that. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And up next, it's Bob in Texas. He's concerned about the theme of bank bail-ins with large derivatives exposure, mortgage-backed securities, CDOs, credit default obligations, CDSs, credit default swaps, and many other toxic leveraged instruments, which, as we all know by now, starting in 2006-2007, were integral to causing the credit crisis, or at least an underpinning there. If you haven't already downloaded and found a copy of Frank Portnoy's Fiasco, maybe I can find that here and post it for this weekend. He outlines exactly how derivatives hide the true risk. They mask it. They're not transparent. They're opaque. The reality is that no institution, I think, is completely shielded from toxic derivatives. Once the next credit crisis begins in earnest, I think what you'll start to find is that very few of the pros were able to discern which firms were hiding those financial weapons of mass destruction, as Warren Buffett calls them. Now, as for your local bank's idea, this is very solid. I think your local and municipal credit unions and banks offer the most protection, but still, I'd suggest looking for alternatives and diversifying when you can. You really just don't want too many eggs in one basket when it comes to banking exposure. Precious metals, excellent alternatives. James Turk's gold money looks promising. I suspect that we could be entering a period of market volatility that might just lead to a huge unraveling of the financial markets, which could catch billions of investors off guard. Keeping that in mind, as well as the fact that no prediction is 100%, everyone is convinced their ideas are right. What if this turns out to just be a little hiccup on the way to new highs in equities? And bonds lose favor. So that's why having that core diversified portfolio is just so great. And keeping, you know, as Nassim Nicholas Taleb likes to point out, of anti-fragile, fooled by randomness, black swan, and so many others. As he's pointed out, Professor Taleb points out that we really need to keep a good solid 10% at least in cash available, keep something in reserve so as these markets collapse, as we've seen lately, you can add to your portfolios. And that solid, diversified portfolio will, over time, outperform virtually every professional that you come in contact with. So it's just a fantastic means to financial success. Stay with us right here. Axel Merck, President and CIO of Merck Investments, manager of the Merck Funds, as well as author of Sustainable Wealth. Welcome back, Mr. Merck.
Great to be with you.
You've noted recently that even if the Fed raises rates, it could be ill-timed, that they just simply are not keeping in step with the interest rate and monetary policy, for that matter, around the world.
Well, intentionally so, I might say. Since the spring, I believe April of 2014, the last paragraph of the FOMC statement says that even as they will start to raise rates, and that would be because the GDP growth and inflation goes back to what is historically be considered normal, rates will likely be lower than what is considered normal. Now, they use fancy words, but basically the Fed is all but promising, and that's my interpretation, to be behind the curve. Bernanke was pretty good at articulating that. He said when you're faced with a credit bust, you don't want to be raising rates too early. You want to, and that's my interpretation, err on the side of inflation, because if you raise rates too early, odds are the deflationary forces will take over again. And so Yellen doesn't have this framework of the Great Depression. She uses employment as an excuse issues, but it's ultimately the same thing, that they want to be behind the curve, they want inflation to go up, and the only problem they have, of course, the moment they're trying to take the foot off the accelerator, the world keeps crashing down, and the reason that happens, by the way, is that Fed policy have inflated asset prices, and the moment you step away from that, asset prices come back down, and when you've tried to boost economic growth with asset price inflation, well, guess what? When asset prices come down, it also causes headwind to the real economy.
But with the upcoming political drama in 2016, you know, November presidential election, do you feel that perhaps the Fed governors and policymakers, although you say clearly they've painted themselves into a corner, that if they're going to act, they may have to act soon because they certainly wouldn't want to be seen as making waves or taking any political stance amid the election season?
Well, they're worried about so many different things. I think they haven't even noticed that the election is coming up next year. Central banker, you may like them or not, but they should set policy. They should kind of set the guidepost upon which to price things. You can price risk based on what the Federal Reserve is going to do. The problem we are in is that this so-called, quote-unquote, data-dependent Fed is reading the tea leaves like everybody else. So they're reacting to the latest move in the stock market, to the latest this and that, and they don't quite know what they're doing, and so they get worried about the Chinese sneezing or something happening in this part of the world or that part of the world, and so that gets them to have their hands tied, and ultimately some people say, well, it's better than to make a promise and then not live up to it. I don't know. I mean, you look at what's going to happen, you set the course and you adjust according to the reality. Now, the election itself, I don't think that's going to be the key driver here. I think the bigger issue they have is Mr. Market itself, that the rising volatility in the market, which had to come sooner or later, is going to tie their hands, because what a rising volatility does is it makes investors more risk averse. And the whole point of QE and of all this money printing was to take risk away, that things are no longer risky. Investing in anything is quote unquote risk free. Of course it isn't, but risk premium had been compressed. Junk bonds don't yield anything anymore, and volatility in the stock market had been low. And now as the Fed is trying to engineer an exit, risk is coming back with a vengeance.
Now, as you've noted in the past, what the Fed does when they essentially issue a put for investors is reduce volatility and risk to virtually null, and that has the effect, if you will, of leading to complacency. I mean, for instance, obviously investors start to just get used to the idea, well, stocks always move up. It's happened since 2009. Obviously, the Fed is there. They have our backs. A monetary policy, the plunge protection team, is certainly a strong combination. However, as you know, Nassim Taleb just found out, and so did his hedge fund investors, you can make $1 billion in a week if you prepare for spikes in volatility. And that's certainly what we've seen lately. Should investors be bracing for more volatility?
Well, the world is, of course, still risky. And what happens, and yes, is the short answer, but what happens is when, say, the stock market is rising and rising and rising on a backdrop of low volatility, then people put in the money not appreciating how risky these markets are. And so, of course, markets are still risky. When risk comes back to the market, investors will say, I didn't sign up for that. And so, of course, the time to diversify your portfolio is always during the good times, but in practice, that rarely ever happens. And so now, I believe, the shift that has happened in recent weeks is, rather than the glass being half full, investors will now look at the glass half empty. Because what they should have done, they should have taken some chips off the table. But the problem is, of course, where on earth do you put your chips? We get 0% interest on in cash, and if you put your money in bonds, well, good luck. They might be going down in a rising interest rate environment. And so we've been approached by folks that say, well, what about a put option strategy or this or that? And it says, yeah, we can do that, but ultimately it means you just have too much money in the stock market, right? Now that volatility is back, people are coming back from the summer break, and they realize, well, maybe I should put some of the stuff into more secure places. And that, of course, happens not just with retail investors. Any professional investor, when volatility is up, is paring down leverage as well. And, of course, when everybody does it together, asset prices come down. And that's why we have been warning. We came out in early August with a note that shorting the market, and not just being in cash. And people said, why on earth would a currency and precious metals guy talk about the stock market? And then 2 weeks later said, oh, it's because of currencies that the markets are crashing. So it is time to be very careful in this market, both on a fundamental and on a technical level, but also from the metrics we look at, which is a lot of it is complacency driven, meaning complacency is our biggest bubble indicator that we have. We are extremely concerned about the markets right now.
There is diversification. Obviously, investors can turn to this, the free lunch, if you will. However, it's becoming harder to find balanced portfolio, or harder to hide, if you will, from volatility, as many of these markets have become highly correlated. And I think we see this just across the board. Investors used to be able to turn, let's say, to stocks and bonds and throw in a little bit of precious metals. But in a deflationary environment, all three of those asset classes could find themselves in trouble. Are you recommending currency exposure? For instance, the greenback has done remarkably well. It's in a solid uptrend. Give us your idea on the currency markets, please.
Well, first of all, there is no easy answer. If you look at the correction in August as well, anything that was the slam dunk went the other direction. And by all means, one of the things you might have noticed, you just mentioned the greenback, the dollar was rising over the past year. Well, it was rising on the backdrop of a rising stock market. That's not supposed to happen. What's supposed to be happening is that the dollar is rising in a flight to quality. And so sure enough, when the markets came tumbling down in August, the dollar was falling at the same time. You couldn't hide in the traditional safe haven places. The reason for that was, of course, partially anyway, that everybody, quote unquote, everybody hated the euro. People were short the euro. People used it as a funding currency for carry trades, whatever way you want to call it. And then when volatility came up, people lowered their exposure. And when you lower your exposure, you have to buy back the euro. And so that's how you can have these awkward things happening. I would not recommend people to kind of go all out and buy the greenback, because everybody else loves the greenback. Everybody else has rising rates. We have rising rates and whatnot. Everything looks great in the U.S. In my view, things are not perfect in the U.S. and things are not quite as bad in the rest of the world. There's too much good news priced into the dollar. And ultimately, and we see that with the sort of when you have overexposed position, what can happen? What you can do with currencies is you can design a portfolio that has a low correlation to something else. Say you take a position of the euro versus the Swedish crown, to the Australian dollar versus the New Zealand dollar. Now, clearly, most people won't do that and can't do that. But what you can do with that is you can generate by design a return stream that is not correlated to your portfolio. And that's why investors, I think, should at least have a look at some of these alternative strategies, because, as you point out, things are highly correlated. How do you hide? How do you diversify? Bernanke talked about a toolbox. That's why I think it's very valuable to have a toolbox available to be ready for what's ahead. And I think the time has come for if volatility is going to be elevated, if asset price is going to come down, for strategies that are long-short strategies, be it on the currency side, maybe on the equity side, or some other areas. Obviously, all of these have their own sets of risks and pitfalls, but you've got to think out of the box for the environment. That's it.
One asset class that has safe haven properties, at least in some economic environments, the precious metals. Sometimes viewed as a currency, even the currency of last resort, this asset class has suffered in recent years. Do you see any silver lining? Do you see any light on the horizon for precious metals investors and aficionados?
Think about it. I mean, we talked about things out of favor. Gold is out of favor by most people. Stocks are in favor. Well, from that point of view alone, it's worth looking at it. Then I mentioned earlier that, in my view, the Fed is all but promising to be behind the curve. A rising rate environment, in my view, matters less so than where real interest rates are. Gold being a brick, obviously doesn't pay any interest and is a good competitor to cash when you don't get compensated holding cash. I don't think you get compensated for cash. I don't think we're going to get compensated properly anyway for cash going forward if the Fed is behind the curve. I don't think we can afford positive real interest rates in a decade from now. And as such, I think gold plays a good role. And then on top of that, gold does have, in the long run anyway, a near zero correlation to equities, another reason to consider gold. Now, I do have to say, I did chat with a, at the time, active FOMC policymakers at the FOMC, and mentioned my view that, hey, I don't think we can afford positive real interest rates in a decade from now. And he said, he looked at me and says, well, he doesn't think that's possible because that wouldn't create a stable equilibrium. And my response was, I never said it's going to be stable.
Well, as we wrap up today, can you tell investors any other markets you're watching, or perhaps any other topicality that you think is pertinent for our listeners?
The good old basic thing is that you always want to be properly diversified, but it doesn't mean the same thing as it meant in the past, because just being diversified to different industries doesn't cut it. Odds are investors are overexposed to stocks because they've been riding the wave up. Take chips off the table, consider doing that. And then beyond that, think out of the box. I mean, we have currency mutual funds, we have a gold ETF. Those are all things investors can look at, but ultimately it is about trying to see how can one be defensive in a world where everybody is pushed into risky assets. And that also means leaving chips off the table. You don't have to chase every rally that's out there. You want to have chips on the table for when the markets come down, that you have some firing power to go back into the markets.
Please tell people more about Merck Investments as well as the Merck Funds.
Yeah, sure. Come to our website, merckinvestments.com, and we have a free newsletter. I tweet a lot. If you want to have instantaneous interpretation on the news, follow me on Twitter. Axel Merck is my handle. We do have three currency mutual funds and a gold ETF. All of that you can find on our website. There are links to there. But I, as a first step, follow me on Twitter and then sign up for our newsletter if you want to hear more about our views. We also have a webinar coming up on how to prepare for a potential crash. Information on that is on our website as well. And so come to our website and learn more about what we do.
One interesting note about the gold, or at least fund that you manage there, as I understand it, looking over the literature, this is actually a deliverable fund. Can you tell investors more?
Yes, certainly. We have a gold ETF that holds London bars in London. Investors holding the gold ETF have a pro rata ownership in the underlying gold. Investors may at any time request delivery. Most people don't, but our delivery feature is not just theoretical. It's a real one. You can request delivery of the London bars, but when you request delivery, you can also request an exchange into coins. And so you can literally have American Gold Eagles or very common coins delivered to your doorstep. The process takes a good week, and it's scalable. We can, if we had a rush of people trying to take delivery, we can do it, and we have done it in practice. The ETF tracks the price of gold, and so it acts like an ETF, but it is deliverable, and it's something for some investors to look at.
Well, that's remarkable, because I think it's clear that many of these top ETFs, including StreetTrax Gold ETF, the top GLD ticker symbol, simply they do have the option of deliverability, but you have to be a major player. As I understand it, it's typically in excess of $1 million of an ETF invest, oftentimes substantially more. It's really up to the discretion of the fund manager, so there's no guarantees that anybody owns these ETF shares. I hope our listeners will invest or at least take a look at the literature. Is there a ticker symbol you'd like to share today?
Yes, the ticker is OUNZ, and of course guarantees is another word that this industry likes to use, but yes, this is a deliverable gold ETF where investors may request delivery of the gold. It trades like an ETF, and you can take delivery of the physical gold. And oh, by the way, one very nice feature, in my view anyway, is that taking delivery in itself is not a taxable event. That means if you have appreciated shares of the Merck Gold Trust and you decide to that you'd rather own the coin instead, that like, oh, the time has come, I'd like to have a coin at home, or I'd like to have them shipped to Canada or somewhere else, and we can make that happen, that in itself is not a taxable event, because you already own the gold, you're just taking delivery of it. And that is something that if you own other gold ETFs, even if they claim that they provide delivery, usually you'd have to sell the ETF, pay potential taxes, and then with the proceeds you can buy the coin. Whereas with ours, you can actually just take delivery of what you already own.
OUNZ. Look into this ticker symbol. We appreciate your thoughts. Please keep up the great work and hopefully return to our show soon.
My pleasure.
Hey Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. I have said that a confused mind does nothing. A confused mind that doesn't take steps to get unconfused often accepts mediocrity as its standard. And unfortunately, there is a lot of mediocrity being peddled from every conceivable direction at you. Right now, we have billionaires and special interest groups hiring people and busing them to protest at political rallies, creating the illusion of political protests from decades gone past. But the difference this time is that people are protesting not from the heart, not from conviction, but from a script. Authenticity is lost, and manufactured opinions and news events are created. We now have the release of the infamous Panama Papers, casting negative light on financial transactions of many world leaders. Of course, no one knows for sure. Apparently, not even the law firm from where these papers originated, how they were acquired, other than to say they must have been hacked. Accidents like this rarely happen at this level. Over the past month, Citibank has been predicting the introduction of negative interest rates in places like Israel and Canada. Bernie Sanders is exchanging barbs with GE CEO Jeff Immelt, who says his company has never been a big hit with socialists. Former Clinton Chief of Staff John Podesta is back in the news, talking about declassifying information about UFOs, Area 51, and alien life, saying the American people can handle the truth. And the list goes on and on. In the meantime, there is no real discussion on the economy, no real discussion on the debt, no real discussion on the slow burn most people are feeling and experiencing in their business and personal finances, and what to do about it. Unfortunately, the discourse of media and its acceptable parameters of debate in how news is reported and guests are allowed to answer in the national news programs is strangling discussion. Real dissent, a real second choice, instead of what is often presented as two sides of the same political coin, is thwarted if and when it gains momentum. I've discussed this before, and I will emphasize it again. Turn off your television. Limit your exposure to mainstream media. Pick and choose the sources of your information from respected thought leaders and organizations. Your ability to think creatively, critically, and responsibly relies upon it. The battle for your mind has been underway for a long, long time. Understanding that you possess the power to claim your own mental freedom and well-being by choosing the news sources you follow is the first step to short-circuiting the garbage-in, garbage-out problem. Because with all the garbage that is passed off as news, what I call chewing gum for the mind, you can become confused by too much useless information. Getting confused is something that can happen to everyone, but staying confused is another way of avoiding responsibility. And that's the whole idea as we move toward the fall elections. Avoiding responsibility of what really matters, and discussing instead all kinds of topics that, while they might seem interesting for a short while, are forgotten when the next one makes the headlines. And the real issues, the ones that are not discussed, and will be with us after the elections, and will be the items Congress and the new president will be acting on, are conveniently ignored or minimized. If your brain is full, take steps to get unconfused now. Your survival and your well-being depend upon it. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. Thank you.